Welcome to Ringside with Eric Dean, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Avalanche beat writer for ColoradoHockeyNow.com, podcaster for Mile High Sports, and I was trying to hold off this podcast because I'm a nosy NHL reporter who covers the Avalanche, but God, I want to know what's going on with the Rangers and how all this Jacob Trouba stuff is going to unfold and unravel, because that's always fun to see. Even if it's not your team, when you know somebody's on the move. I remember back in the day, I think it was the Montreal Canadiens traded Michael Camilleri. The Calgary Flames had traded him to Montreal, and it was a deal where Camilleri was pulled off the ice in the middle of the game. You know, these things happen ever so often, and when they do, they're so fun to keep an eye on, and it just is a nice reminder of how entertaining the NHL is when it comes to player movement. And how us fans just love this kind of stuff. We love to see the drama. We love to see, you know, wake up to a bunch of tweets and reports that Jacob Trouba's not playing tonight. He's going to be out for, quote-unquote, roster management reasons. And another defenseman was called up. And then it becomes clear that Trouba was given the option of a few trade scenarios last night and said he'd sleep on it. And the Rangers are basically putting him in a corner where they're saying that if you don't accept one of these deals, we're going to put you on waivers at 2 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Mountain Time on Friday. Well, I'm recording this podcast. It's 1:33 p.m. Eastern, 11:33 p.m. Mountain Time. So we're 27 minutes away. My podcasts rarely hit 27 minutes when I'm by myself in the middle of the season. So we may or may not get some news on this show. We'll see. It'll be fun to keep an eye on. But you know, I by no means am I saying this is something where I'm hoping the Avalanche are in on it. Absolutely not. That's probably not the fit that this team needs right now. However, it's really fun to just kind of track this kind of stuff. While we're at it, I'll just give a couple opinions. I think it's actually very cutthroat to Chris Drury. We saw this with Barclay Goodrow last offseason, where there was a trade and he blocked it using his no trade. And Goodrow went on to get waived and get picked up by the San Jose Sharks, a.k.a. the team that he blocked a trade to, a.k.a. coincidentally and kind of awkwardly, the team he used to play for, and is now back there with, you know, years left on his contract. So I'm really curious how this goes. I absolutely despise in the frickin' NHL how many players have no trade clauses and no movement clauses. I think GMs are stupid for, you know, cracking this can open. I think it is a massive win for agents to get to the point where all of these guys seemingly have this type of no trade and no move protection, where they can block trades and corner teams and ruin their trade value and all these things. And then teams have to, in turn, try to do this kind of crap that they're doing where, you know, a player has a no trade but not a no move. So because you have a no trade, we're going to threaten you and put you on waivers. And then, hey, anybody's going to pick you up. So it's, I hate it. I think, you know, the best way to fix this issue, and this might be one of the only things. Contract term is another one that I kind of will have opinions on at some point, but this might be one of the only things that I have an opinion on where the opinion is not pro players. And it's that in the next collective bargaining agreement, man, I hope they do away with it. I hope there's some kind of seniority, some kind of leadership, kind of like how the NBA has max and super max. And if you hit this, then you can get more money. And if you hit this, and if you're this kind of a star, then you can get this kind of trade protection. I hope the NHL does something like that. And I hope the league can get a win on the NHLPA in basically, you know, bringing that to fruition for the league. Because, like, it's wild to me that over the offseason, and this is no disrespect to a player, but it's wild to me that over the offseason we had to have conversations about how Ross Colton has trade protection, and if the Avalanche want to buy him out, well, he's got a no-trade clause for the 24-25 season. And then in 25-26, he's got a modified no-trade clause. And then in 26-27, he's got a modified no-trade. It's like, why does the third-line center slash top-six winger slash middle-six forward, who had never played for this team before being acquired, have all of this trade protection. So I never get it. I'll never understand it. I don't know how we got to this point where half of every team has some kind of trade protection. All it does is lead to this kind of drama where teams have to be cutthroat. Where now, like, the reality is Chris Drury might be doing something that's going to affect this locker room forever. The morale, the drama surrounding the team, it's not a good look. It's not a good look at all. And now Drury and Laviolette are going to have to deal with real pissed off teammates giving quotes to reporters like, "I love this guy to death and I wish he wasn't dealing with this." People aren't happy. They're already not playing well. And now they're not happy. So we'll see how this all unfolds. The Rangers, as you know, are 4-6 in their last 10. They're 13-10-1 on the season. So what was once a 9-4 start isn't looking too hot anymore. They have a 563 points percentage, which isn't all that isn't all that good. It is obviously better than where the Avalanche are at, but that's a conversation we're going to get to. I'm kind of milking it here in the beginning of the podcast before getting to whatever the hell the Avalanche are these days. But it is an issue. It's a problem that Chris Drury and Laviolette are going to have to deal with. I'm really curious if it's fixable throughout the season or if this entire season has just been throttled and if they can never get it back and start winning games. Because winning heals all, but you got to start winning for winning to heal this kind of stuff. And can the Rangers win? You know, it's not that Jacob Trouba is their most important player. He's not going to leave the team, and it's not going to, you know, have the effect of if Panarin was traded. But the morale, the intangible part of this, the stuff that you can't measure, is really going to take a hit. And it already did with Goudreau, and here we are again. You know, we had the Trouba stuff in the summer, and now we have this. So really curious to see how it plays out again. It's now 1:39 p.m. Eastern time. I am obviously coming from Detroit, so going off of Eastern time, the Avalanche are here tomorrow. Well, they're probably already here now, but they play tomorrow here. So just something to keep an eye on. But with that, let's talk about the Avalanche. Let's talk about how the Colorado Avalanche are so damn lucky they were able to pull out that win against the Buffalo Sabres a few days ago. And I don't mean it in the sense where they got lucky, because you don't just get lucky to score 5 goals in a row. And, you know, they have the star power they have. It's all well documented. But it's the fact that they go out and get this goalie in Scott Wedgwood. He has a great relief appearance. They win the game. They stay 2 games above 500 instead of falling to 500. Then they go into Carolina. You know, one of the biggest issues they've had are their starts. One of the biggest issues they've had is when they have those breakdowns in the beginning, the goalie isn't always bailing them out, and they're down 1-0 or 2-0 before they find their legs. You know, Mark Rycroft, I think it was, said this on the Altitude TV broadcast during the Carolina game. He said, the Avalanche are, I think, a top three team in comeback victories. He said, on one hand, that's great because you have the star power and the ability to make a comeback at any given time. But on the other hand, it means you're trailing a lot. So it kind of is a double-edged sword in that sense. And the Avalanche have been trailing a lot this season because they are the worst first period team in terms of goals against. I think they're at 42 now. Granted, San Jose got lit up yesterday by the Tampa Bay Lightning. They were second, but they were at 34. So unless they let in 7 or 8 first period goals, they didn't, because they let in 8 goals throughout the whole game. Colorado is still last in the NHL in goals against in the first period. I don't know about goal differential, but in goals against at least. So they've trailed a lot, but they get a goalie who was able to weather that early storm. The Carolina Hurricanes are a team that, as we've known, in this era with Rod Brind'Amour, with Don Waddell, who is now Eric Tulsky as the GM, you know, this is a team that likes to throw numbers at the net. They like to get as many shots. You know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, even if they're not high danger, which is something Wedgwood also talked about. Carolina, this is what they do. They flood the crease. They shoot, they shoot, they shoot. They get pucks on net. They did that yesterday, as they so usually and so often do. the Avalanche weathered that early storm, and, you know, they had a breakaway that was stopped, and then they had another breakaway for Arturi Lehkonen, which ends up resulting in a goal. And I think it was MacKinnon had a breakaway, then Lehkonen ran and later had one too, could have made it 2-2, and then he was stopped, and then it became 3-1, and that kind of was the end. But Arturi Lehkonen gets a breakaway and scores after weathering that early storm. And you kind of had a feeling in that moment. You're like, okay, the Avalanche just scored five straight goals against Buffalo, and Wedgwood was a perfect 22 for 22 in shots against and saving every single shot. And then they come out against the Carolina Hurricanes, and weather the early storm, they scored the first goal. Is this the time they turn the page? Is this the start of the winning streak? Is this the start of the change in their season? And it wasn't. Carolina scored and made it 1-1. On their 12th shot of the game, they ended up, it ended up taking 34 shots for Wedgwood to let in a goal. So he made 33 consecutive saves in right around 60 minutes, I believe it was, if I remember correctly. So he was pretty close to going a full 60 minutes without letting in a goal in an Avalanche uniform. So it's not quite a shutout, but it's pretty damn good because it was split over two games, obviously, and one of them was in relief. But then Carolina scored again. They got a 3-1 lead. The Avalanche had to make that late push. 16:05 of the first period. So that's when Carolina scored. So, yeah, he played, I think it was 48 minutes and then 16 minutes. So he went 64 minutes and faced 33 shots before shot number 34 was scored on him. That's a great start to his Avalanche career. Carolina comes out in the second period, gets a power play, scores. A couple minutes later, Roslovic makes it 3-1. Felt like the game was gone there. Carolina had 15 shots in the first period. The Avalanche's 15th shot on goal was the Nichushkin goal at 14:41 of the third period. With 5 minutes and 19 seconds left, Colorado got their 15th shot on goal. Carolina had 15 in the first period. That 15th shot from Nichushkin was a goal that made it 3-2, assisted by Parker Kelly and Devon Taves. And you're like, okay, 5:19 left, one goal game, let's do this. And boom, too many men on the ice, penalty by the Avalanche. And 30-some seconds later, 35 seconds later, Martin Natchez scores on the power play, 5-3. Sorry, no, 4-2. And you're thinking game over. 24 seconds later, Val scores again, 4-3. And as the Avalanche have done over and over and over again this year, they let in an empty net goal. And I kind of want to see how many empty net goals they're at now. For some reason, I've been so addicted to the stat this year. So let me see. Terrible podcasting by me to look up stats mid show. So the Avalanche have now let in 13 empty net goals in 27 games. The reason why that number is crucial is because last season, the Avalanche let in 13 empty net goals. They have already matched the number of empty net goals that they surrendered all of last season, and they did it in 27 games. If you're wondering why MacKinnon, Makar, Rand, and all these guys have low plus minuses, it's because they're the ones playing 1-2-3 minute long extended shifts late in the games, looking for a game tying goal, letting in an empty netter, sometimes two empty netters, sometimes an empty netter right away. They've got a lot of minuses on the board from empty net goals against. It's hurting the top guys, it's hurting the team, and it's kind of making you lose hope in this whole thing of them being pesky and you know, having that that ability to make a comeback, which they've done sometimes, you know, like, for example, the Buffalo game they did, but they didn't do it with the empty net. You know, I think they've done it earlier in the season. I can't quite grasp what game, but yeah, that's kind of, you know, where the Avalanche are at. 13 empty net goals. Last year, the leader had 27 empty net goals against the New Jersey Devils. So Colorado's pretty much halfway there. And we're not halfway through the season. We're a third into the season. So it's a rough show. They let in the empty netter. They lose 5-3. Their power play let them down yesterday. Their power play over the last 13 games leading into yesterday was at 13%. And then they went 0-3. They had a 40-some seconds of 5-on-3 time. They were 0-4. My favorite thing is not 0-4 the number of power plays. My favorite thing is calculating 0-4 the number of minutes or the amount of time spent on the PP. So yesterday, Colorado was 0-3, but they were 0-4 5 minutes and 3 seconds on the PP. And by the way, mixed into that 5-on-3 is some 5-on-3 time as well. That sounded confusing. Mixed into the 5 minutes and 3 seconds of power play time, there was a portion of it which was played with a two-man advantage, a 5-on-3 power play. So not only were they unable to score with the man advantage for 5 minutes and 3 seconds at 5-on-4, but some of that was played with a two-man advantage, 0-4 all of it. Carolina Hurricanes, 2-for-5. Carolina Hurricanes got their first lead at 2-1 with a power play goal. Carolina Hurricanes shut the game down and made it 4-2 with a power play goal. Colorado Avalanche, several power play opportunities, 5-on-3 power play opportunity. Granted, it was only for 35 seconds, but still, with the talent you have on this team, not only did you not score on those 35 seconds of power play, 5-on-3 power play time, which, by the way, came early in the third period where you were trying to make that comeback, but not only did you not score in those 35 seconds of 5-on-3, but the remaining 125, you did absolutely jack shit with it. It's hurting them. It's hurting them. It's making it tough for this team, the lack of power play scoring. Hate to call him out again. Casey Mittelstadt is struggling, and he's struggling bad. 14 minutes and 59 seconds of ice time. That's not good enough for a player who's that good. And the problem is, you know, Jared mentioned his skating issues right now. The problem that I'm seeing with Mittelstadt is the skating is not there right now. You know, I don't know if he's gassed. I don't know if he's hurt. I don't know if he's, you know, trying to keep up with the Avalanche pace. I don't know what it is, but he had an excellent training camp, and he was incredible to start the season and has just completely fallen right off a cliff. He gets the first penalty 2 minutes into the game. Scott Wedgwood and the Avalanche weather the storm. He got the penalty for slashing at 3:01 of the second period. That's the one that Carolina scored on to make it 2-1. Seth Jarvis's goal. 14 minutes and 59 seconds. Again, he played 12 minutes in a game where Colorado was chasing the entire game against Buffalo. He only played 12 minutes. In a game where Colorado entered the third period, down 3-1, needs a goal. Spent most of the game trailing. Again, 14:59. They are playing these games needing offense, searching for offense. They're not parking the bus and playing defensive minutes. They're searching for offense, and they're not using a guy who should be producing. That says a lot. So we'll see what they need to do to fix it. They've played Rantanen with him. They've played Lehkonen. They've played Nichushkin. Something is up. You need more out of Casey Mittelstadt. It's crazy how much things can change over the month or two, because in the beginning of the season, when he was doing what he was doing with 13 points in first 10 games, playing with the Kovalenkos and the O'Connors and the Callum Ritchies and Joel Kivirantas and the Ivan Ivans, I started to wonder. I didn't talk about it or write about it because I didn't think it was going to happen even then. But I started to wonder, man, like, Team USA can't have a conversation without mentioning Casey Mittelstadt's name, right? Like, he's got to be, I don't know, forward number 16, 17 on their list. And if you're taking 13, that's pretty close to the cutoff. Like, he's got to be in the conversation. And then he went completely off the rails. So, just a tough go for Casey. You need more out of him. You need more out of the team defensively. There's a big issue here with the lack of depth once Josh Manson got hurt. You know, not to shit on Casey, or not Casey, not to shit on Sam Malinsky's season or anything. But that's a player that you like on the third pair. I don't know if you like him in your top four when your team is playing the way they are defensively. Kale McCarr played 26 minutes and 3 seconds. Kale McCarr played 28 minutes and 30 seconds. Devon Taves, 26 minutes and 3 seconds. Samuel Girard, way down at 18:49. And then after him, you get to the next guy, Sam Malinsky, and he's at 16:27. So the Malinsky-Girard pairing isn't getting a lot of time together. They're not playing all too well together. And you know, Malinsky's the one getting the fourth most ice time. It's a reminder. It kind of reminds me of the 2022 season. And I'm not saying that Josh Manson's at the end of the road. Obviously, right now he's injured. It's not like he's doing something wrong. He got hurt. It happens. Went into the boards. Some kind of arm, wrist, elbow, hand injury. But it kind of reminds me of the 2022 season where the Avalanche, let's see if I can remember this off the top of my head. They had Taves and Makar, Eric Johnson and Sam Girard, Bowen Byram and Jack Johnson and Ryan Murray before the trade deadline. And they didn't take any of those guys off their roster, and they added a top four defenseman in Josh Manson. And ultimately what it did, whether it was Bowen Byram or whether it was Eric Johnson, it kicked both of those guys down to the third pair, made Jack Johnson the extra, and Ryan Murray eighth on the depth chart. Granted, there were games where Ryan Murray was playing ahead of one or two of the Johnsons. You know, then he got injured. But it kind of reminds me of that kind of thing where what makes it more difficult here is, like, you needed a right shot defenseman in 2022. Right now, I'm not really sure where to go with this because it's like, hey, the Avalanche can go out and acquire a top four right shot defenseman and kick Josh Manson down to the third pair or, you know, interchange with Josh Manson. Again, not because Josh Manson's a problem, but because when Josh Manson gets hurt, you have depth issues. But at the same time, if you bring in a right shot D and do that, then where does Sam Molinsky play? Does he play on his offhand? Does Josh Manson play on his offhand? Because you're not kicking Sam Girard at the top four. So there is a depth D issue that the Avalanche need to solve. Or, you know, maybe it's as simple as just bringing in a third pair guy that's not Sam Molinsky or Calvin DeHaan, somebody else to shore up the depth, somebody else to give him another option where when a Girard or when a Manson or when a Taves or when a, or when a Makar get hurt, you know, you're never happy to see one of those guys go down. You're not going to replace, you know, X player is not going to take over for Devon Taves, but you're going to feel a little more comfortable about your top four because you have options. It's something I wrote about in my observations where I said that Bowen Byram was a luxury having him for nearly three full seasons, the entire cup year, the entire 2023 season, and most of the 2024 season, you know, I'm talking regular seasons, because when an injury happens to your top four, great, stick Bowen Byram up there and you got a top four guy. Hell, he's probably top three. Hell, he's probably top two. That was depth. That was a luxury. I don't intend that to happen. But, you know, that's something that really did help them, and I wonder what they do there because, you know, it's happening with the forwards too. Like, Casey Mittelstadt is not playing well, and Ross Colton was your third-line center at one point. Granted, who knows where he plays when he comes back, but because of that, Nathan MacKinnon is playing 25-05 in an early December regular season game against the other conference. Nico Rantanen is playing 25-23. Arturi Lehkonen 24-08. So it's same things happening with the defense. You lose a top four guy. Sam Girard's not gelling with Molinsky. He's down to 18 minutes. You know, Sam Girard didn't have a great night. He didn't really give you much offensively or anything, which is fine. But stick all that together, mash all that together, and you have your second pair playing 18 and 16 minutes, but your top guy is playing 28 and a half and 26. And what do you have to show for it? Four goals against the goalie, empty netter, five goals against. So Makar and Taves played 28 and a half and 26 minutes. They were both a plus one. And you still lost 5-3. So it's just something to keep an eye on there. I really wonder what the Avalanche do there, but they do need this guy, Josh Manson, to get back into the lineup, and then we'll see what happens from there. The Avalanche are in Detroit tomorrow. I am in Detroit already. I've been in Detroit for a couple weeks, week and a half since Thanksgiving, whatever, 8 days. I don't know time anymore since the wedding and the honeymoon and kind of the craziness that has been my life since November 12th. But I'm excited to see the Avalanche again tomorrow. I haven't seen them since the game where Sam Girard scored that game-winning goal in overtime against the Nashville Predators. That's the last game that I went to. I'm excited to see him tomorrow, and then obviously I'll meet him in Denver. I'll be in Denver Sunday morning, but I'll meet him in Denver October 12th and 14th. I believe both of those are home games. They're playing a lot of road games in December, but you know, I'll be there for the rest of the season and onward in Denver. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see him tomorrow at Little Caesars Arena. The Red Wings are going through a rut of their own. They've won three of their last 10. This is not just a must win. This is a you gotta win game. Like, you cannot give up 2 points to the Detroit Red Wings. and fall back to 500. Start to gain that separation. Get two games above 500, then three, where you've been before. I think they were 13 and 10 at one point. But then you got to build your way up to 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games above 500. You got to start to build that separation between the W's and the L's and the columns. Because right now you have 14 wins, you have 28 points, and you're a third of the way season. You're not even on pace for 90. It's kind of crazy to think. But at the same time, it will never worry me until it matters, because a couple years ago, we saw an Avalanche team that at the 40-game mark was at 43 points. They were 27-3, and they still finished with over 100 points and won their division. Granted, they lost in the first round to a wildcard team, the Seattle Kraken, but that's another story for another day. So, big turnaround for the Avalanche. You got to beat the Detroit Red Wings. After that, you know, the New Jersey Devils are a better team, but they're, you know, kind of a roller coaster of a team this year. They're up and down. I believe right now the New Jersey Devils are 7-3 in their last 10. But the weird part about the Devils, they're 11-4 on the road, but at home they're 6-5-2. They've won 6 and lost 7. So beat the Red Wings. See what you can do against the Devils. Then you have the Pittsburgh Penguins, who currently, we'll see how they are when the Avalanche are in town, but they're currently 11-12-4, but they've won their last 4. So the rest of this road trip is a very winnable road trip. You got to make something of it. Going 3-2 would be nice. Going 4-1 would be awesome. And then you get back home and you got a couple games at home to rewind, reset, recoup. The tough part about the Devils game is you're going back-to-back. You got the Red Wings on Saturday. You got the Devils on Sunday. And you're playing 3 of 4. Pittsburgh on Tuesday, and then you only have a day off before Utah at home, and then another day off before Nashville at home, and then another day off before you play Vancouver, and then another day off for San Jose, and that's a back-to-back with Anaheim. You're playing a lot of hockey. I've been writing about this for a while. 11 games and 20 nights started on Tuesday. You're 2 games into that now. So let's put an end to the podcast here. It is almost 2 o'clock, so we got another minute left. And for absolutely no reason at all, I'm going to milk this until we hear the waiver wire or get that waiver wire news, even though it literally doesn't matter, because I'm not breaking any news. This is not a live podcast. So just for the people that are crazy, sicko, diehard fans like me that want to see what my reaction is, because ultimately, if he's not on waivers today, that basically all but guarantees that he's getting traded. That's the way that I've understood it. From everything that we have, from everything that we have read and seen in terms of reports, that's the way it sounds. So unless Chris Drury or someone has had some kind of change of heart, that's where we're at. So let's see what this waiver wire does. It is 2 p.m. now. Let me see. It'll probably take a second. I do want to touch on one more thing, you know, now that I talked about that back-to-back while we're waiting on this waiver wire news, because I am a sicko and I want to see what the New York Rangers are doing with Jacob Trouba for absolutely no reason at all at 2 p.m. on Friday, December 6th in the middle of a regular season. Since I mentioned the back-to-back, I do want to say, if I had to predict what happens with Scott Wedgwood and Alexander Georgiev, because there's a lot of games, like I said, like starting tomorrow, the Avalanche play on 7, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 17, 19, 20, 22. Oh, no, sorry, not 16, 17, 16. Well, I guess they have a couple nights off. 16, they have the 17th and 18th off before they play again on the 19th. So they do have a 2-day break in there. I must have missed that the first time I looked at their schedule, but let me just double check that one more time. So yeah, so you do have 1 2-day break in there. I must have missed that, but it's still 11 games and 20 nights that started on Tuesday. But just to say that again, they play 7, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 2 days off, 19, 20, 22. So you're starting a stretch of 3 and 4 nights tonight. You got 7, 8, and 10. And then you go 12, 14, 16, couple days off, And then you have another stretch of 3 and 4 nights, 19, 20, 22. So if I had to predict, I would say that, I would say Detroit's going to be Wedgwood, depending on how he does and how Georgiev does on the 8th against New Jersey. Will determine who plays on the 10th against Pittsburgh is the way that I would see it. Because I could see a scenario where Wedgwood plays well, wins. Then Georgiev plays the Devils, win or lose. They go back to Wedgwood on the 10th. They play Wedgwood on the 12th. And they go back to Georgiev on the 14th against Nashville, a team he's beat. Unless, of course, they want to go with Wedgwood against Nashville. But I do think this is going to be a bit of a tandem, and I still think the Avalanche are making another goalie trade, no matter what happens with Georgiev. Him playing well isn't going to change that. Him playing well is only going to make it easier to move him. Again, now that they've traded for a backup goalie who has never played in the playoffs before as a starter, he has made 3 relief appearances for Jake Oettinger. He has never started an NHL playoff game. Because that's the case, I cannot see a scenario where they enter the postseason, no matter how good Georgiev is playing, without a security blanket. You know, they can also go out and acquire another guy and just make Wedgwood the third string or something, but I just can't see that happening. I'm going to put an end to the show here. Jacob Trouba is not on waivers today, so by the time you're listening to this, there might be a trade somewhere, or Chris Drury was bluffing. We'll see how it goes. Maybe they kick the can down the road for another day. But if you made it this far in the show, especially with the way that I just milked it with this Trouba stuff for absolutely no reason at all, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we out ya.